Now, it's 17 minutes past 8 here on RN Summer Breakfast. Now, even if we stop polluting now, large waste patches in our oceans would continue to grow for the next 500 years, says oceanographer Dr. Eric Van Sabeel. A new study published in December reveals the speed and direction that waste travels across the sea. It also identifies a new waste accumulation area or patch in the Barents Sea between Russia and Greenland. The six patches where waste accumulates are now recognised as more dynamic or leaky than previously understood. According to researchers, this means the problem is truly global and can't simply be blamed on the surrounding countries. We're joined by Dr. Eric Van Sabeel, who is a researcher at the ARC Centre of Excellence for Climate System Science at the University of New South Wales. Dr. Sabeel, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much.
Now, using buoys, you've tracked waste in the sea. Can you tell us briefly where waste patches form?
Yeah, so the waste patches form in each of the five oceans. So if you imagine a globe, then you see that there's the Pacific Ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, the Indian Ocean, and every time between the two countries, so for instance, between Australia and Chile, halfway between there, a little bit more to the east every time, so a little bit closer to Chile, there's patches. And these patches, they are the size of New South Wales, for instance. They're pretty big, and they form in each of these five different basins. And in these patches, the waste just accumulates. It's the winds blow the ocean, and the ocean that makes the currents. And these currents are such that actually they move towards the center of what we call the gyres. Yes. So if you think about the circulation in these all of these five basins, it's very slowly around the basin.
So it forms a vortex.
Yeah, it forms a slow vortex. But it's really slow. It's order maybe 10 centimeters per second, maybe even less. So very slowly it moves around. And that's also why it takes so long for these patches to form.
Yeah.
It's because
When you say a patch, that's quite a benign word. What you're talking about is an island of rubbish.
No, I'm not talking about an island of rubbish at all.
Okay.
So if you go out to a boat and you're even in the middle of the North Pacific patch, which is the most famous one and the one we know longest of, you'd be hard-pressed to find plastic there.
Right.
So there are plastic bottles there. There are rubber duckies there. But most of it is actually really tiny pellets of plastic. So millimeter size, small, a confetti. It's kind of like a soup structure, right?
Ah.
It's a lot of ocean with very, very little pieces of plastic just floating in there and slowly. Yeah.
Yeah. So what threats do they pose, these patches of tiny pellets of largely plastic, I assume?
Yeah, yeah. So most of it is all kind of different plastics, right? So it's the bottle caps. It's also styrofoam. It's everything that's there. So the bigger pieces of plastics, particularly bottle caps and lighters, they can get directly into the food chain. So for instance, albatrosses eat them, they scoop them up. And if you go on the internet and you look for pictures of albatrosses with plastic in them, you see carcasses of dead albatrosses on their nest completely filled with bottle caps. So like hundreds and hundreds of bottle caps in their stomach. So that's a direct threat to these animals.
Yeah.
But the much smaller plastic, the much more abundant small pellets, they are actually they form a threat because they the small plankton can grow on them. It starts growing on them, and then the fish come and they eat the plankton, and with it they eat the plastic. And this plastic, the way the chemistry of it works, is that it likes to absorb all the poison, hazardous chemicals, poisons, hormones, these kind of things. Because you have to understand that. If you talk about plastics, the problem is much bigger than only the plastic. The plastic is kind of the canary in a coal mine, right? It's what we see. It's this wave of plastic coming in.
Yeah.
But with it are the fertilizers, the hormones, the poisonous chemicals, everything that gets spilled in the ocean, everything goes there. And the pellets, they absorb these chemicals and they get into the food chain. And they accumulate in the fish, and that can pose a problem.
Yeah. So what's the main source of this pollution?
Well, most of it comes from the land. So the way we did our study...
Flushed out of waterways.
Yeah, yeah. Or beachgoers leaving their rubber ducky on the beach and a storm comes in. Yeah, so the way we did our study is it's really, really hard to find data on how much plastic actually gets into the ocean on any given beach or even on any given country. Yeah. So we assumed that... the amount of plastic getting into the ocean is has a direct relation to the people living near the ocean, the number of people living near the ocean. Mm. The more people living near the ocean, the more plastic you will get into the ocean.
Mm.
And then from there, it's actually, we don't really know, we don't really understand how this first initial, maybe 10, 20 kilometers, the plastic bridge is that. We need more observations for that. That's something that we're going to do next.
Yes.
To actually understand how the plastic crosses the surf and the tides and everything. But once it's in the open ocean, then it's just the slow currents moving them around.
Indeed.
And then they get into all these patches.
Now, you're suggesting there are really only two solutions. What are they, Eric?
Well, so... There seems to be three solutions, right?
But the
first solution is a non-solution. The first solution is probably the easiest one, or what people would think would be the easiest is just go out there and scoop it up.
Yep.
But that's not a real solution because, as I said, the plastic is so small, it's so pellet, that you need a very fine mesh net.
Yeah.
And if you then scoop out all the plastic, you will certainly scoop out all the fish too.
Yep.
So what you end up with is an ocean devoid of life, which is probably not what we want. So the two other solutions would be just to prevent plastics from getting into the ocean.
Yes.
Make sure that it doesn't actually get there. Or make plastics that degrade much faster.
Yes.
So these patches, they form only after 50 years or so. The plastic needs to be in the ocean at least 50 years before it gets to the patches. So if you make plastics that break down in 10 to 20 years or so, then it won't even get into the patches. And then at least we won't contribute more to the patches, right? These patches are not going away. Everything we put into the ocean as of now will stay there for a very long time.
Yeah.
But we can. The least we can do is try to not make them even bigger.
And the thing is, it requires an international solution because no one country is to blame. It's everyone.
Yeah, so that's a really new and surprising result that we found, is that it's not... So there are five patches in each of these oceans, but it's not that... Sydney garbage is only in the patch in the South Pacific. It's in every patch.
Everywhere.
It's everywhere. The patches are very leaky and plastic goes from one to the other.
What you're suggesting, Eric, is that the whole bloody ocean needs to be managed.
Well, what I am suggesting is that people need to make sure that plastic doesn't get into the ocean.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Otherwise, it'll have to be managed.
Yeah, well, and more
the whole planet's got to be managed, Eric. Lord. Okay, thanks, mate. It's a sobering message. But
the good thing is it also increases our understanding of the ocean, right?
Sure.
I mean, we do understand more. And the beauty to me is that through these plastics, we actually can see something about how the ocean works.
Mm.
And we can understand the currents. And we can understand why these patches form. And even though they form as a bad message, why the physics of the ocean and the currents and the winds, how they play together. That's beautiful. That is really awesome.
Yeah, awesome. Been joined by Dr. Eric van Sabeel, physical oceanographer and researcher at the ARC Centre of Excellence for Climate System Science at the University of New South Wales, with an extraordinary story. It's 8:26 here on RN Summer Breakfast.